welcome to Stories That Matter, the Hawkwood podcast.
So welcome to Stories That Matter, Hawkwood's podcast series, which invites changemakers, thinkers, artists and innovators to discuss the stories that have influenced them, their visions for the future and the actions that they are taking to change the world. It's quite dramatic, isn't it? So welcome Fozia. So today I'm with Fozia Ismail, and Fozia is a Somalian artist who's been with us this week, but not just this week, because you've actually been with us several times at Hawkwood on residencies. Yes. But first of all, Fozia, tell us a little bit about your work.
Yes, hi, thank you so much, Alicia. I love Hawkwood. So my work is basically, I'm a British Somali artist that works in kind of really exploring food and material cultures and the way that we engage with those things as human beings, really. And I'm really influenced by my family. My mother is a Somali nomad. And for those people that don't know what nomadic culture is, you know, we're based in East Africa, which is the Horn of Africa. And we're from the north of Somalia. And my mum is sort of was born near the Ethiopian border, really. And her family were camel herders. But the whole of Somalia has this really rich nomadic pastoral culture. And camels are such an essential part of the survival of that culture. And so what's happened is, obviously it's been massively impacted by climate collapse. Hugely impacted. I think Somalia has more than 6 million people displaced because of climate. And so a lot of my work is really about how we can use some of the kind of ancestral ways of making and collective gathering to help us through this kind of polycrisis, both in just practical, like how we gather and host, which is nomadic culture is huge in terms of about hospitality and sharing. It's a really incredibly generous culture. I think Somali nomadic people are some of the most generous people, but actually they're I would say they're at the coalface of climate collapse and yet still have this huge tradition of hospitality and care towards others, because when you're moving around in that kind of landscape, you know, sometimes you will need that support from other nomadic villages or you know, people. So there's a real, I feel like there's such a connection, not just to land but to people and to animals, so more than human. There's this whole philosophy, Dagan, which is about your interrelatedness, not just with each other, but with the landscape itself and with the animals that reside in that landscape.
Absolutely beautiful introduction. Thank you so much. And I reflect that you've come to Hawkwood previously with the Dagan Collective.
Yes,
and you were working on a really special weaving project.
Yes, yeah.
Would you like to share a little bit more about that work?
Yes.
Just so we can put it in the context of what you described.
Yeah, so the first time I came to Hawkwood was 4 years ago with Dagan Collective, and that was to do with, Ian and I were exploring this nomadic weaving practice. So that came out of a project that I did. It was out of a city fellowship with the Arnolfini in Bristol. Mm-hmm. So I was awarded a city fellowship to explore this history of camel meat and cassette tapes and this kind of the movement of people and the sounds that came with that. So it was a wonderful soundscape project. Like, we worked with elders and, you know, I created a soundscape from it. And from that, one of the elders came in and made me a weaving, actually, as a thank, you know. And it's so beautiful, because this happened to me recently in Malmo as well.
Oh, really?
I was doing workshops in Malmo over this cassette and camel meat tapes, and an elder came and gave me a weaving that she made. And there's something so special about nomadic women doing that, because you know, you wouldn't normally sell weave, you know, you would gift it,
yeah,
you know, right. In this way. So it's a really heartwarming thing. And Faduma, one of the elders, made me a weaving, and we talked about this process. She was talking about part of the interviews with these elders was about what came out was this. The songs that they were singing, they were so musical, the group. Like, they would sing, like, and they would all know the same songs, these old folk songs they were singing. But she was explaining that you need to be able to... You sing partly as a way of passing down these patterns and keeping with the pattern, because what's amazing and extraordinary about nomadic women is their bodies and the trees and the environment become the loom, because they can't carry a loom. Oh. So they've invented a really beautiful way of collective weaving. Wonderful. To make up for the fact that you can't carry a loom. You need to be lightweight. And what that's forced is this really collective singing practice alongside the making, you know, and that is just amazing.
Absolutely,
you know, like,
beautiful.
It's a really beautiful process. And
And the songs really pass down that cultural heritage,
yes,
as well, and the tradition.
Yeah,
and passing
absolutely.
On songs is also really beautiful.
Yeah,
but I can
absolutely.
Imagine receiving a weaving is a true gift, because of the time, the
absolutely.
Sense of community and
absolutely.
Everything you get from that.
Absolutely, yeah. Because that's someone that's taken time to make something. And, you know, it's a slow process to weave. It's not something that you can rush. And even... you know, so we came, you know, it was to have that opportunity. It was the first art residency I did at Hawkwood, and to have that opportunity to be here for a week in this landscape, and just have the time to learn that craft and sit in nature and do that was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that's particularly special about this space and this landscape, that there is something about the environment that forces you to slow down and really reflect about what you're doing on this planet.
Yeah.
You know, which is really very rare and really special.
Well, it's been a lovely journey that we've had with you, because you've been a few times. But outside of Hawkwood, and we'll come on to what you've been working on this week in a bit, but outside of Hawkwood, you've also been running supper clubs
around
the art of hosting and hospitality.
Yes, absolutely,
And how does that tie in with your work around research?
Yes, so basically the supper club, which I don't do so much anymore now, I don't host in my house anymore, but the supper club really started as a response to Brexit. So really it started as a kind of response to what I saw as this growing hostility in the country around people deemed as not British enough or not other. And actually I saw food as solace, and I would gather people in my house and I would cook Somali food. But it was also a way for me to process what I was, it was a very difficult time for me. I think I had several horrible racist incidents that happened to me actually around Brexit. And so I really leaned into my mother's cooking at that point to sort of comfort myself and my family. And then I realised actually there was a space for people to gather as well. And so I would just host these supper clubs, and it would be really lovely, because lots of strangers, people that just moved to Bristol, for example, who might be living on their own, who don't know anyone, would come. They might get a single ticket, but we always ate family style. So you might have your starter on your own, but the main meal was, you know, you would have your plate and everyone had to pass, you know, it wasn't a restaurant. That's what I was saying. It wasn't, you know, you come in. So if people brought tickets, I mean, you'll pay. It was very clear this is not going to be like a restaurant.
Yes.
You'll get Somali food. And it was a real hit. And I ended up being on the cover of The Observer and different journalists came. It was bizarre. I didn't really expect it to do so well. But I think maybe a lot of people were craving, there's all of these tensions, and we see it now politically with reform and all of this hate, and I think there's a lot of confusion, and there's also this crisis with climate collapse, there's also, you know, there's a lot of anxiety out there, there's a lot of, you're dealing with a lot of tense bodies, and I think...
And increased polarisation.
Mm, yeah, so, absolutely.
Food is such a way to bring people together around conversations and, you know, it's something that everyone...
Connects to. Yeah.
And I think cultural heritage is so interesting in the way we share food and how we can connect with other people.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a really beautiful project.
Yeah. And I loved doing that. And I've continued to do food related work. So actually, I have a drink coming out called Arruello Drinks with and it was done with asylum seeker and refugee women over 3 years.
Amazing.
It's a commercial drink that will be sold in various art, like South Bank will host an event with it and Whitechapel will sell it, and it's going to be at Bristol. If we could get it into Stroud, let me know any breweries.
I think we might be able to because
so it's
right?
limited
that.
Yeah, it's limited stock, but what the drink does is it supports creative and collective art making within asylum seeker hotels in Bristol. So I'm working with one hotel in the centre of town, and it's just so beautiful. And actually I was intending to make a smaller amount of stock, but commercial businesses have really wanted to stock it for Refugee Week, and so it's kind of, I see it as like an edible manifestation of hope. Like, it's almost like
that.
You know, these are people, these are human beings, and they're being made to not feel like they belong on land. And part of the sessions that I ran with the women included foraging, so that they could feel like, this is, you know, you're in a new city, you're on this new city, let's go and explore. And I'll be doing a series of workshops coming up, hopefully taking people to Sims Hill Garden, which is Sims Hill Growing Project, which is a beautiful community farm in Bristol. And they host asylum seekers on a Wednesday for growing projects. And so, yeah, it's kind of this kind of, it's almost this way in which the natural environment can hold us all in these difficult times. And I think it's always that thing of returning back to nature. And I think that's something that I definitely have learnt from my mum. Like, I feel this.
Yeah, we were chatting yesterday briefly and you were sharing how before you went to university, your mother made a very interesting intervention, didn't she?
Yes, yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
So before I went to university, she said, she's like, we're going home, you're going to see, you, because she grew up as a nomad. She knew, I mean, grew up in London, I didn't know anything about nomadic culture. I mean, I heard her stories. And then she took me to the city, and then my uncle and I stayed in the city for a bit. And it was just after the war, actually. So the city, there was no infrastructure, really. You know, it was bombed out. It was quite, it was quite a scene. But people were rebuilding. The war had ended. There was a really beautiful energy of people coming back, migrating in, back in from the outskirts. But my mum took, my uncle took me to stay with my cousins. They were out in the bush. Some had been moved to a refugee camp in Ethiopia. I went and stayed there. But I spent some time as a nomad with my aunt as well. And I, you know, was making rope out of plant fibers. And it was all, it was just such a different space to be in, and different landscape. And, but it's, although it's barren, so people think of Somalia as this desert, barren place, but actually it's really biodiverse. It's full of plants when you know how, where to look. And that's something I was really impressed with, the fact that you can make, I didn't know where, that you make things from plants. You know, it was the first time I saw that,
and,
you know.
It sounds like that experience being really formative on all
absolutely
work.
Absolutely.
Having that yeah. that time there,
yeah, it was then, a privilege. It was a real, it, although tough, like it's not easy, you know. I was scared because of the height. You hear animals and you just, it's a difference. I was terrified of going to the toilet at night, you know, things like that, because you're out in the book, you know, you just, and they, my aunt was like, this is ridiculous, they're not going to come and get, you know. So I, it's such a different way of coexisting.
Yeah.
And they really did coexist with animals, because I remember I wanted to walk up this kind of mountain. I was like, there's two mountains outside Hargeisa at the time, you know. And I said, oh, I really want to walk up the mountains. And my mum was like, oh, no, you don't go there. That's where the baboons live. And it was just like this. Oh no, that's their territory. We don't go there. You
such
leave the baboons.
A deep connection, yes, to yeah. the natural world.
Yes,
that I think, you know, we feel so disconnected sometimes yes. in our day to day.
Yeah,
don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. But also this idea that animals have rights over
yes.
their own landscape.
Yeah.
You don't, well, why do you, well, they don't like us being there and we don't go there. And actually, as the city's expanded, I think that's had a huge impact, development and that nomadic way of viewing the natural world. And I remember speaking to my uncle before he died, and he was horrified by some of the development, some of this expansion, some of the Western ways of thinking that have now started to influence
yeah.
politics in the country, and this disconnection actually within the Somali diaspora about thinking, it's almost like thinking the West is better in its way of doing things, development in this way, rather than actually we all need to go back to that
Absolutely.
Kind of much more intuitive, older way of thinking around the natural world, like living in that way. Because if we had done that, we wouldn't be in this situation with climate.
Mm. And I think that's where your work is just so important, because
yeah.
it's bringing those conversations together. And I know, I mean, your work has been exhibited
yeah.
across the UK,
yeah.
hasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah. And actually we were in Japan and India.
Japan.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I've been working in India, developed a project with Public Arts Trust India to focus on the Raikai community, who are also a camel herding community. And that's been wonderful. And I worked with a camel expert and a scientist there. And there's been created large-scale weavings. They're not being shown at Whitechapel. That's going to be a different exhibition at some
Tell
point.
Tell me a little bit about Whitechapel, because that's coming
oh,
up
yes.
next.
Oh, that's coming up. And this
yes.
is why I've been here this week.
Yes.
So this week I've been focusing my time on wedding rope. So I've been making... So Whitechapel is about this endangered... this endangered wedding basket, which is almost like a vessel. It's a container for all of nomadic life. So it's a really important craft. It's a really beautiful basket, and the bride's family would hand it over to the groom. It's a complicated history. I was speaking to my sister about it, and I'm exploring it from the eldest perspective on what this basket means, and also younger people's perspective, because it's dying out, the practice is dying out, but with it the rituals and the knowledge around the land is also dying out, because all of the materials that would be used, for example, the wedding rope would be made from a specific tree, and you use the bark of the tree, and this is a really it's not quite a holy. It's got a very spiritual alliance for nomadic people. So you would also gift the wedding basket under this specific tree. So it's a galol tree. It's like the tree of life. So they rely on this tree a lot. It's a very it's revered. And so, but because of climate and because of the impact that's having, they're now making it from. I'll show you the kind of sacks. Here. Sorry, I've got this old Royal Mail sack.
Oh, yes.
Corn sack. So this is what they will reuse. So this is what I've been experimenting with this week. It's been really tricky. So you're reusing these sacks, which is, it's great that they're repurposing.
Yes.
But in the installation, I want to talk about what that means for, just how far the climate issue has gotten, you know, because I think, you know, I was there making when I was 18, I was making a wedding rope, and I saw the process from the hig, you know, from the tree, and it's actually, there's a loss there for me. I think there's a loss for my mum as well and my aunt, like the it's quite a beautiful process. You're collectively making this rope, but you're making it from a specific tree, and there's, you know, and all of these things that I just think there's such a, it's kind of, I just feel a bit heartbroken.
Yeah, you're holding so
yeah.
much cultural memory
yeah.
and also climate grief
yes.
at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's a lot, and this work is so important to share to make sure that people understand and appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is why this fantastic exhibition is going to take place.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Hannah, can you describe a little bit what it's going to look like?
Yeah. So basically, when you walk into the space, the idea is that also we're grounding people in the space. So I'm getting people to take off their shoes, which might be very hard for some people, I think, in a London setting. But the idea is you take off your shoes. For people that don't want to take off their shoes, there will be those plasticky things, hopefully biodegradable. I don't want to. So the idea is you take off your shoes. It's carpeted in the section where the wedding basket sits. And you will be surrounded by these ropes. So I'm making these ropes and I will... There'll be knots. So the tradition would be you knot. There's so many knots and there's riddles around these knots and there's stories around these knots. And the ceremony is about unknotting and doing the riddles. And these riddles are kind of formative riddles, information about nomadic life, testing knowledge about all sorts of things to do with nomadic life. So poetry, there's this whole... thing. But when you come into the space, there's these ropes are all around the space. You've got a beautiful grass weaving done from my aunt Hubba Doll, and then my own weavings either side. So I'm doing it in threes, and then there'll be cast hands representing myself, my mum, and my aunt. And but you, as an audience member, when you touch some of the ropes, there's going to be six touch points where the cast hands are, and when you touch it, you ignite the sound, and you're part of this ceremony as well. So your body becomes part of the ceremony. So the idea being that it's almost recreating this idea that we are all in a loom together in this, like, we're all trying to figure out this climate collapse, but we're all a bit lost with it. But hopefully, it should be hopeful. That's the aim. It's not meant to be. You know, there's a lot of grief in it, but there is also, I'm trying to make it as hopeful as possible.
Because you're building community.
Yes.
And actually you're sharing these stories.
Yes.
And you're reaching new people.
Yes.
And one of our other fellows, Curtis Ogden, he's in the States, and he often talks about network weaving as a way of connecting to people. And he uses that sort of idea of weaving around our connections and community. He works a lot in food resilience, actually.
Fantastic.
So I might connect you both, because
I
think it would be interesting for you to work together.
Yeah.
But I think what you're doing is creating that sense of community, shared understanding, bringing the importance of noticing and the cultural memory that you're sharing. Well, I really wish you well.
Thank you so much.
And it's been an absolute privilege to have you here this week.
Oh, thank you.
And I really hope you're going to come back.
Yes, I'm sure I will.
Make sure we see how all of this amazing work is developing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I will, I'll share when it opens. I think it should be opening July 15th.
Fantastic.
It's part of the Backyard Biennale. So please do come through. And there'll be little bits of holding. I'll be doing some somatic work with different people as well. So holding space for different people, you know, if people want to come and do some particular piece of work around climate grief, we'll be doing certain touch points throughout the programming to hold space for people's anxieties as well.
Really important. Thank you.
Yeah.
And hopefully you said you might share a little bit of the music with me.
Yes, I will. I definitely will.
Good.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks again. Thank you.
All right. Bye. بردك بدلي كان العرسين كعاكر وكر نوكرية كيسا كيل كيو قوي علما كرو الله وداي كرو كواسي دو صافا ماي سغال ديران ارماني.
Thank you for listening to Stories That Matter, the Hawkwood Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, tell your friends, sign up to our mailing list, or on social media.